Welcome to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. Over the next half hour, Docs in a Pod will educate you about the health and wellness of adults everywhere. Co-host Dr. Audrey Berea and former television broadcaster Gina Galaviz will share information to improve your health and well-being. And now here are Gina Galaviz and Dr. Audrey Berea.
Welcome to the award-winning Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. I'm your host, Gina Galaviz Eisenberg, sitting in today for Ron Aaron, who is on special assignment. We're so pleased to have you with us today. Docs in a Pod is available on podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And we're also on the radio in several cities in Texas and Florida. Each week, we talk about a variety of health and wellness-related issues as they impact Medicare-eligible seniors and others. Our co-host today is, drumroll, nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman. Yay! Olivia works at the WellMed at 9th Avenue Clinic in St. Petersburg, Florida. I've not been there, but I'm jealous because I think of the sand. She earned her nursing degree at Florida State University in Tallahassee, and then she earned her master's degree in nursing at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and she's board certified in family practice. And I'm jealous about this because I'm a Swiftie. And she's a competitive show singer, and she still sings today. And she's the proud mama of two fur babies, a yellow lab and a golden retriever, which I think is a hard mama to be because they don't talk or talk back, right?
They don't, but they're the best.
They are the best. And this is something Ron would have had a hard time saying. And she's also from the great state of Michigan. He's an Ohio State fan, so he's a Buckeyes. So if that doesn't say... Him. You know, that doesn't say enough right there. And I know he's probably listening, so I'll have to talk to him about this later. And so today we're going to be talking about something that I think so many of us think about, especially after we have a meal, especially breakfast and lunch for me. Did you know that the American College of, Olivia, help me with this word, gastroenterology?
Gastroenterology, you did good.
Okay, I said it wrong. IBS. is a very common disorder. Scientific tests show that, I guess, about 10 to 15% of the people in the United States have it. And it's more common in women. Almost twice as many women have IBS than men. I did not know that. And yet scientists do not really know why women get it more than men. What do you think, Olivia?
Oh, I think there's a lot of things women get more than men, and there's not really answers. So hopefully studies on women will become increasingly popular in the next, you know, however many years, but maybe we'll find out one day.
And we certainly like to talk about it. So they have enough anecdotal information, I would think. But anyway, maybe Sharon Nieto, our guest today, can talk about it. She graduated with an MSN, a Master of Science in Nursing, from the University of Texas at El Paso. And she joined WellMed just in August of 2015. And she was with the practice with WellMed in El Paso as well. She's currently with WellMed at Kenworthy. Prior to becoming a nurse practitioner, she was very busy in the endoscopy unit. She says she truly enjoys caring for patients. And outside of work, she loves spending time with her family, gardening, reading, playing with her dogs, and more. And she enjoys the routine of everyday things that they do most together. So I'm probably... curious to know a little bit more about that, but routine is important, I guess, when we talk about just not with family and hobbies, but also in how we take care of ourselves and what we eat. And again, we're talking about IBS, so take it away, ladies. I think I have it, but I don't know.
Okay, so, Sherry, so what would you say your, you know, routine is on a daily basis?
Just having meals together and the general things that you do. You know, we have a small child, so we have older children than a small child, and the routine with meal times, and it's time to get dressed. And then on Saturdays, let's get up and go to soccer and, you know, different things like that. I really, really do enjoy those routine everyday things that we do as a family. I think there's a lot to be said for just enjoying the small things.
You know, it's interesting.
To something big.
To me, it's like with routines, like my routine, and not to you know, TMI, but a lot of times after a meal, you know, I start getting a stomach ache. Mm-hmm. And I mean, do you find that y'all, and so I have to plan my routine according to when I eat because of that. with that TMI. Is that something that you find patients come to you and tell you, or is that something they don't tell you till after the fact?
Sometimes they do bring that up, and that goes along with the IBS that we're talking about today. So IBS is a chronic, non-inflammatory disease that a lot of people have. It does affect women more than men here in the U.S., but in other areas of the world, it's, you know, it may not be such a drastic change between men and women being affected. I wonder sometimes if it's maybe that men don't want to ask about that or bring that up, or maybe there's a fear of, if I say that, you're going to send me to get a colonoscopy automatically, which is not necessarily the case.
Olivia, I'm going to ask you how we know if we have IBS, but first, I just want to reintroduce us to everyone who's listening, those who may have just joined us. You're listening to the award-winning Docs in a Pod. I'm Gina Galaviz-Eisenberg, sitting in for Ron Aaron. Our co-host is nurse practitioner Olivia Ruman, and our guest is nurse practitioner Sherry Nieto with WellMed at Kenworthy in El Paso, Texas. We're talking about IBS, symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment. And Olivia, how do we know if we have IBS?
So IBS isn't, you know, a type of thing that you can do a specific test for. There's not a blood test. There's not a stool test, really. It's more what symptoms are you having? So as far as I know, you have to have recurrent abdominal pain. At least there's like a certain amount of times you're supposed to have it a week in the last few months. And then associated, it's either associated with a change in the look of your stool. So whether it's loose, hard, the color is changing, and then in frequency as well. So an increase or a decrease. So a lot of the times I think we think of IBS and we think loose stools, but there's actually a subtype that's also hard stools, so constipation as well. So you can have a bunch of different types, and it's mostly diagnosed with your symptoms.
It almost like it would seem like hard to like come to see you and say, by the way, I eat, I have a stomach ache, and I have weird looking stool.
Yeah, everybody, you know, the number of times that people tell me, I'm sorry, I have something embarrassing to say and something embarrassing to bring up. It's not embarrassing. We're medical providers. This is what we do. There's nothing embarrassing you can bring up. So if you think you have a problem, please don't be afraid to bring it up.
Now, Captain Underpants would not have a problem bringing all this up, but
you're
do.
You're right. You're very so, right. Yes.
So Sherry, what should we look for, I guess, in our stool?
So you want to, Olivia mentioned the duration of time. IBS is when you've had the symptoms that are persisting, usually intermittently, for about 3 months. And how many, you want to pay attention to the stool characteristics, the frequency, and if abdominal pain, if it changes related to bowel movements. Those are things that kind of go along with IBS, and also paying attention to, you know, when you go to the bathroom, try to look at the stool. I have a lot of patients that'll come and say, I have diarrhea, and I start to ask, well, did you see any blood in it? Because that's something that doesn't go along with IBS, you know? So I'm trying to get more information. And sometimes they'll say, well, I didn't look, I just flushed the toilet, but I know I have to go to the bathroom a lot and it's diarrhea. Oh. So, it's important. Take a minute to go and look at the stool, not to, you know, get too graphic or anything, but you want to pay attention. Do you see blood? Do you see mucus? Mucus is something that does show up with IBS. Blood is not something that we see with IBS. And then the characteristics, like there's a Bristol stool chart that describes like the different types of like how the stools can look. And that can be helpful. I don't know that it's needed to go and be that detailed. I think that you can do a lot with other symptoms that people are describing. We want to find out, do the symptoms improve after you've defecated? Or, you know, sometimes people will say it makes it worse.
Mm.
It's really variable.
Well, you know, as mothers of human children or mothers of the four-legged children, if their poop smelled weird, looked weird, changed colors, we would be on the phone to the vet ASAP. What in humans should we really, besides blood in our stools, what if it's black or changes colors or it sinks or it floats? I mean, is that a sign that, hey, talk to the doctor and set up a colonoscopy? What do you say, Olivia?
So, well, first of all, black stools, yes, definitely. Please call somebody. That's usually a sign, even though it's not red, a sign of blood in stool. And that's a little, you know, more pressing than maybe a brown stool or a yellow stool. Other things I would say is, so, you know, a lot of people will ask about what's a regular bowel movement. It's more so what's regular for you. So if you tend to be constipated and now suddenly you're having a lot of loose stools, that's different for you. So that would be something maybe we need to bring that up. Or vice versa. You usually have, you know, really good bowel movements. They're smooth and soft and they, you know, come out very easily. And then suddenly you're straining or you haven't gone in a few days. That's something you need to look into as well. So I would say more so changes in your normal pattern. Again, please look at your stools. I get that all the time too, Sherry, that, oh, I didn't look. I don't know what they look like. I'm like, please.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I know. It's like you want to get in there and you want to flush and move on and you're just glad you did it. Well, you know, like with stomach aches, after you eat, you have a stomach ache or you always have a stomach ache. Is that normal or is that something that you need to tell your doctor? I know some folks will say, well, I'm just going to have a take some Pepto-Bismol and I'll be done with it. I mean, we're self-medicating, I guess, with Pepto over-the-counter stuff. I mean, is that something to be concerned about? Asking for a friend.
Sherry, what do you think?
So once in a while to have a stomach ache wouldn't be necessarily something that would be worrisome. But if you're having abdominal discomfort that happens each time that you eat, you know, we need to look at that and find out what is going on, you know. And then maybe I do ask people to go and kind of keep a diary, a food diary of symptoms versus what you eat. So I notice when I have ice cream that I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to have problems going to the bathroom later. I'm going to be in the bathroom too much later. You know, kind of keeping a food diary on what symptoms do you have in response to the foods that you've eaten? That's really valuable information, even for someone that's found to have IBS, you know, because different things will trigger different people.
Mm-hmm. I guess we're all different. We're going to take just a quick little break and we're going to continue our discussion on IBS. I'm Gina Galaviz-Eisenberg, along with our co-host, nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman, and our special guest, nurse practitioner Sherry Nieto. You're listening to the award-winning Docs in a Pod.
Turning 65, it's time for an important choice, deciding what Medicare coverage is best for you. WellMed can help. When you become a WellMed patient, you can connect our primary care with a Medicare Advantage plan. WellMed doctors and care teams spend quality time with you, listening and learning about your health. WellMed and a Medicare Advantage plan could be right for you. Choose WellMed. Learn more at 866-433-5048. That's 866-433-5048.
Thanks so much for staying with us on the award-winning Docs in a Pod. I'm Gina Galaviz-Eisenberg, along with our co-host, nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman, and our guest, nurse practitioner Sherry Nieto. So Sherry, let's talk more about IBS. Are there certain foods, or say once we're diagnosed, a doctor says, Gina, you have IBS. Are there foods I need to stay away from? After you give me a diagnosis, what happens next?
Next, there are some foods that are associated with greater IBS symptoms. So I've heard a lot about the low FODMAP diet recently, and it's really restrictive, but what it is it's looking at foods that tend to ferment more quickly than other foods in our digestive system. So the idea is that you would go with your healthcare provider and maybe a nutritionist along with them. So using a low FODMAP for diet for a short period of time where you eliminate a lot of things that ferment quickly in the diet, and then you slowly reintroduce those and see which ones give you a hard time and which ones you're able to tolerate better. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about that low FODMAP diet in recent years. And it can really make a huge difference, finding out what agrees with you and what does not agree with you.
I guess we just want to eat whatever we want to eat, and we don't take that into consideration. Olivia, what do you tell your patients once you've diagnosed them with IBS?
Sure. So I also love to tell my patients to keep a food journal. I think that's the first step. That's the easiest thing to do, because it's true, your IBS trigger might be lactose, but that's, you know, a common misconception that everyone who has IBS is lactose intolerant. That's not always the case. So spicy foods we talked about can be irritating, gas-producing foods, so beans, things like that, and then certain vegetables can be a little harder. So like asparagus is kind of a hard food to digest and can be aggravating. And I guess certain fruits too, like apples. So, you know, it's easiest to start, yes, with keeping a journal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so Sherry was talking about the FODMAP diet. There's a, it's not an IBS diet, but if you think about something that was pretty popular previously in previous years, the Whole30 diet, it was like a very similar type of thing where the goal was you're eliminating all these foods, dairy, soy, gluten, to see then when you start reintroducing things one at a time, what is aggravating to you. So that's, you know, the similar thing, but it is very difficult because you're eliminating a lot of things at one time for a few weeks at least, and then one by one reintroducing. So it's a commitment for sure, but, you know, if you're having a lot of issues, it's worth it.
Is there a way to cure yourself of IBS, or once you're diagnosed, is the next step having a colonoscopy just to make sure everything is good down there or in there or up there? What do you tell your patients, Olivia?
So I guess I'm not sure if cure would be the word, but you can definitely control your symptoms. So I think you could put yourself in a place where you're not having IBS symptoms. Sure, if your trigger foods are fully eliminated, which, you know, I'm sure people cheat occasionally and have that ice cream that's triggering to them just because you're at a party and, you know, everybody else is having it. But for the most part, you could definitely control and limit your IBS symptoms. As far as colonoscopy goes, again, that's not like an immediate, oh, you have IBS, you need to go get a colonoscopy. Sherry, what do you usually tell your patients who with IBS when they need colonoscopies? Is it, you know, outside of the normal guidelines, or are you doing them more often?
No, I follow the usual guidelines as far as colon cancer screenings, or if they have symptoms that are, you know, that are indicating a need for a colonoscopy, maybe more frequently, but not specifically just to the IBS symptoms. If they say that they are worried about something, then I'll definitely refer them to, you know, GI to go and look at that further, because if they're worried about something, it's on their mind, that in itself can cause stress, which can aggravate IBS too, you know? And we want to do this shared decision-making, you know, bringing patients in to, so they have a say in part of their care. We want to be a team with them in their care, not like I'm going to tell you everything that you do and you have to do it my way, the way that I say. We don't do that so much anymore. Now we want to go and make it a team approach. So we're taking care of people and they have, you know, they have a say in their care. They can say, okay, I'm okay with waiting on this for a while, and maybe we'll look and see how we do with, you know, with this other thing.
Is exercise, does that play a role in managing and living with IBS?
Yes, it does.
What does it do to for your patients?
So it helps with the motility, with the gut motility. It'll help keep people more regular, and it can reduce stress. And all of those things are helpful in managing IBS.
And I guess maybe with women, because we're such caregivers to everyone all the time. Mm-hmm. So I guess the stress, whether it's, you know, our pets, our four-legged, I won't call them pets, our four-legged babies, or our two-legged children, you know, our spouses, our family members.
Mm-hmm. Sure, taking some time for yourself too, right? Yeah.
To help with the stress. So again, so we could recap before we end our conversation for the day is, what would you tell your patients who come and say, I notice I'm having a stomach ache after I eat. Is that something I should be concerned with? Sherry, what would you tell me? I came in and said that to you. What are the top five things I should be doing, being aware of?
First of all, if you're my patient, you come in and tell me I have a stomach ache each time I eat, I want to go and check some labs. And then I want to go and ask, you know, what are types of foods? Is your diet very consistent? Is it with everything that you eat, or is it just with certain foods? Of course, let's get some labs, maybe check and see if there's any anemia. Let's look at your weight. Is that stable? If you're losing weight and you're having these stomach issues, then we need to find out, is there something else that's going on besides just a stomach ache?
And then you take it from there. But I guess the first thing is, we have to say something. If we're not saying this to our doctors, we don't know.
Right. We can't help you if you don't. If you bring it up, then we have a chance to help you.
Right. So Olivia, you found you're not a mind reader either, correct?
I'm sure not. I try to ask detailed questions, leading questions, but I can't, you know, I can't ask every single question that possibly could lead you into telling me something. So I would say, yeah, just don't be afraid to tell us. And then when you are ready to tell us, come with the facts, I guess I would say. Don't just say I have a stomach ache and I don't know anything else about it. I don't know when it is. I haven't been paying attention. I hear that a lot. Oh, I don't pay attention to when I get them. I just know I get them. Pay attention to your body. It's yours. I can't, you know, feel what you're feeling. So if you come in with, I get them this many times a week, I've been getting them for at least this many months, they happen when I do this, they don't happen when I do this, it's really helpful to get started with a diagnosis, if that's what we're, you know, leading toward IBS, or a diagnosis to something else, or if you need a referral somewhere to see GI, perhaps. That's the best case would be very detailed.
So I guess we've done a disservice to our children where we tell them, don't talk about poop, right? And yes, they grow up, we're like, we can't talk about this. And I guess we need to start talking about it, especially when we go see our doctors.
Yeah, that's very true. I think it does start early. Talk to your children about letting them know to tell you if something's, you know, wrong with their body, so they're not afraid later on. Yeah.
Right. We'll empower our patients who are listening and maybe our soon to be patients, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess
men especially.
And men especially, exactly.
Yeah. Don't be afraid. Don't make your wife call. You can call. It's okay.
Well, I guess the advice there is, you have someone who's hesitant at home, watch Captain Underpants, read the books. It's okay to talk about, because that's the best sign to know if something's going wrong. Mm-hmm. Because it's what's coming out of our body.
Yep. And if you're not looking at it, then I don't know what it looks like either. So
I certainly don't. I guess there is that fear, like, well, what if they want me to bring some in? Like, the veterinarian asks, and we're like, okay, how am I going to grab that? Right.
That is true. If we want to do that, we'll give you the tools to do it. So don't worry about it. But that's right.
So is IBS something that you actually diagnose and say, yes, you have IBS?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yep. Yeah. If you fit the criteria and you have the symptoms for long enough, then that's something you could be diagnosed with at your primary care office.
And Sherry, what is the biggest warning sign or signal that you have IBS?
I think the change in the bowel habits and in response to either diarrhea or constipation, and how your abdominal pain changes in relation to having a bowel movement, you know, the frequency. And then, of course, we want to go and check and make sure that there's not something inflammatory going on, because IBS is non-inflammatory. It's, you know, there's not a, it's not causing anemia and things like that. IBS is symptom. It's got to be like hypersensitivity of the gut.
Uh-huh. And
some tools like to go and help keep a healthy lifestyle.
Healthy lifestyle. Well, we're going to flush it for today. All right, ladies? We're out right now. So we've come to an end. So I want to thank you both so much. Thank you, Sherry Nieto, for joining us today on the award-winning Docs in a Pod. And thank you to our wonderful co-host, nurse practitioner, Olivia Rahman. I'm Gina Galaviz Eisenberg. And in the word of the late Charles Osgood, I'll see you on the radio.
Executive producers for Docs in a Pod are Dan Calderon and Leah Medrano. Associate producer is Charisse Pendleton. Thank you for listening to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. We welcome your emails with suggestions and comments on this program at radio@wellmed.net. Be sure and listen next week to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed.